Well, that takes me right back to sitting in the bhajan hall at Anandashram. Larry and Kate are there now and should be having breakfast, maybe, after the flower ceremony. So, wonderful to think of them there. Felt like we were there as well. Did a posting today and entitled A New Year Alignment. As we enter into a new year, it is propitious time to reflect on our lives with a summary of the past year and a projection into the next. Sometimes day-to-day living makes life full of details, moving from one place to the next, one situation to another. And through all the busyness of life, we lose touch with the bigger picture. A new year is a wonderful time to focus on the themes that truly matter. We come into this life with missions to accomplish. We need only look at those recurring themes in our lives for hints as to what we have come to do. For some, it is education and learning, or having and raising a family, a profession and trade, a passion for a sport, hobby, or craft, and having a loyal group of friends. All can be a big part of our lives. Some of these can seem rather pedestrian. Others are vital. However, what is important to one may hold absolutely no meaning for another. The fact that you hold it as valuable is what makes it important. There are everyday actions that are the mechanics of life. Things that we do that have value, but don't rank as very memorable, such as household chores, maintaining the car, and paying bills. These are the things that take up so much of our time. They also produce major problems if they are not attended to, but are not the kind of things that come to mind if we are asked, "What did you accomplish within your life?" And yet, especially if we struggle with some of the mechanics of life, there can become a big part of what we have come to learn. A theme of learning for me has been organizing and simplifying things in my life. I find that better organized helps me to accomplish the more important goals. There's a lady from Japan, Marie Kondo, who has made an entire profession of helping people organize their stuff, and wrote a best-selling book that I like very much, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. I fully intend this coming year to once again make a total sweep of all things in my care and use her method for keeping only those things that bring me joy. In addition to the daily mechanics of life, there are those things that are really important, such as a safe and loving home for children and family, financial security, professional goals, being a loving and supportive presence for friends, and maintaining a healthy body and environment. These important goals are closer to home, the things that speak more deeply to our souls and have a lasting impact on our lives. Many of the repetitive activities that make up the mechanics of life often exist in order to support those important things. Sometimes we get a sudden reminder of how important these things are when we have a health challenge or a financial trial. These past couple of years, keeping this body healthy took on a new focus of importance after being diagnosed with tumors. Subsequently, I've been working with a naturopath and getting scans and tests done several times a year, including taking supplements prescribed by the naturopath and working on healthy habits. Of course, I had been eating healthy before, but as I say, this has made healthiness even a deeper focus. All continues well in this regard, as I enjoy perfect health. For that, I thank our ever-gracious God and gurus, and your thoughts and prayers, dedicated health professionals and health insurance workers that have helped make this possible. This new year will definitely entail making perfect health an ongoing reality. In addition to the mechanics of life and attending to those important aspects, there are those essential elements in life that are must-dos. Like a pyramid, the mechanics of life form the foundation for achieving what is above it, the things that qualify as important, and then moving up to the pinnacle of the pyramid as that which is essential, the crown of your life. For example, for my father, it is clear that he came into this life with a keen desire to run his own business. And he spent a great deal of his life doing so in a dharmic way, filled with honest, right action. If he had not done this, he would have definitely felt that his life was not complete. This was essential for him. What is essential for me is not running a business. But my purpose took a turn from my father's to that of a spiritual quest for self-realization. In my adult years, everything in life, education, profession, family, have all been in support of this one overarching goal. But there have been many times in life when my actions seem to betray this essential goal. And this is what is vastly important here. When the pyramid of foundational mechanics of my life do not support my important goals, which in turn do not enable me to realize the crowning essential summit of life, then I am out of sync with the very purpose of my coming. And this being out of sync leads to great suffering. Confusion and suffering occurs when incarnating souls do not remember why they have come. Knowing God and serving Him in all souls in accordance with His inner direction has been and continues to be my real purpose of my life. Every life has a unique set of circumstances for what a soul has come to learn. It is incumbent upon you to be clear as to what is essential for you to learn and to become. You must be fully aware of what is important to you, and to align the mechanics of your life to support those important and essential goals. Through this alignment, you may rightfully enjoy peace and an absolutely fulfilled life. Starting a new year is a wonderful time to calibrate all three of these parts of your life: the mechanics of daily activities, with achieving those goals that are important, and never losing sight of what is essential. Missing or misaligning any one of these three parts will lead to suffering, while having all three in sync makes you know that you are on track with why you are here. It is also how you know that when you make sincere efforts and God's grace, all success is open to you for the fulfillment of your purpose, just as God has designed it for you. In the thought of your perfect alignment with your true purpose, I wish you a very happy new year and a flawless fulfillment of all that you have come to accomplish. I suppose that there is something in our lives that makes it so that we don't run straight to the goal. There are a few exceptions of these. Papa and Mother and Master all had such terrific concentration on getting to the goal. And I wish that I could say that I was just oriented just as they were from birth all the way through. But this is not how it was for me. It was my own karma, perhaps. It was the influence of this world, which is also part of my karma. Why was I born into a certain family? Why did I have certain struggles in my life? And these were all consequences of choices that I have made along the way. But if I could write the script for this life, it would be from the very get-go to be entirely focused, knowing what is essential in this life. And that is to realize God. I sensed it. I felt it, but I couldn't articulate it. I didn't know it, for instance, in the same way that Master knew it, from a very early age. I would sit in my room when I was very young, and I would listen to the sound of silence, what I now know to be the sound of Om. And it was so loud, so penetrating, that I would put hands over my ears sometimes because it seemed like it was too much. I didn't have a name for it. I didn't know what was going on. But I also had this sense that it wasn't something to talk about to anybody else, so I didn't. And I don't think anybody could have helped me with it at the time anyway, because there's so little knowledge about this. And yet, if I had known at the time, I could have expanded my consciousness with that Om. I could have let go of the things of the world, the things of the body, loosened my identification with it, and through that, expand with it so that the pressure, the pain, and everything that came with that tremendous sound vibration would not have affected me in the same way. I also, at times, would be lying on the ground and looking up at the sky, and suddenly I would see shooting particles, it seemed, darting before my eyes, and I felt the sky to grow, or rather I grew and the sky grew with me, and it seemed like it took on an infinite expanse. These were hints to an inner life that had not yet fully awakened, that I did not know how to deal with all of these different experiences that I was having. And yet, they occurred to me anyway. But it was not until my later teen years that I was in a real crisis. And I finally called upon God. I didn't know if a God existed. I didn't know if a God could help me. But I knew that I needed help. And I knew that I needed relief from the tremendous strain and pain that I felt myself in. And when I called out to God, He responded. And immediately I felt as if 1,000 pounds of weight was taken off my shoulders. The pain was relieved. And I tried to rationalize it. I tried to make something else out of it. But there is something inside of me that knew I couldn't rationalize it away. Something had happened. Something powerful had happened. And this put me on to a new path. And a path that I didn't know at that time that would take me to my guru. Some people question whether a guru is necessary. And from my own experience, I know that one absolutely is. I would not have made the progress that I made without Mother. She got me on the right track. She taught me wisdom that I had no knowledge of when I first met her. She imbued me with a spiritual power that was beyond any reckoning, anything that I had ever experienced before. And I knew that it was real. I knew it because every time I would come back, I would think, will it happen the same time that it did before? Will I feel that same power, that same uplifting power, transformation? And every time I did, I felt as if I was standing in a spiritual windstorm that was being generated. And it was wonderful, and it was bewildering, and it was beyond my comprehension, and yet I knew that it was exactly the right track for me. As the years unfolded, and I practiced, and I continued with Kriya, with meditation, with chanting. We were chanting here tonight, and when I first met Mother, it was a Wednesday night service, and she played the harmonium, and we all chanted Ram Nam. And she would sing it, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram Om. And it was a haunting tune to me. But it wasn't something that I could get out of my head. It kept going around even after I had left after service. And so I started singing it, and then I started to feel it. As I chanted it, I was not good at chanting out loud for very long. My voice would start to give out very quickly. And then I would take it inwardly, and I would be chanting it mentally. And I'd feel the vibration of it. And it would start to lift me up, and it put me into a state of bliss. And as I was sometimes driving and chanting, it's a wonderful combination to do, except when you get so uplifted, your eyes closed, then it's not such a good combination with driving down the road. A little bit dangerous, even if God's doing the driving. And sometimes I had to pull over because my eyes would roll up and I just couldn't help it. And I'd be lifted up into His heaven, into His bliss, into His joy. And it began to transform me. And I was practicing my Kriya. I remember the first morning after I received Kriya initiation. And I went outside. I had a lambskin that somebody had given me years before that. And Mother had said to put some wool underneath you. So I thought, well, this will work out. So I put it out, and the sun was shining, and it was a beautiful June day. And I practiced my Kriya, and I was so thrilled to be given this technique. I knew very little about any of this world. Before I met Mother, I had not read the autobiography of a yogi. I had not known anything about Kriya. And then Mother said that she was giving initiation. Well, if Mother was giving the initiation, I was going to be there. If she would have me. And she did. And so I was. And so this transformation began. And it didn't happen as quickly as I wanted it to. I wanted things to happen right now, of course. Isn't that the way that we are? But it didn't dissuade me. Because there is more pain in the beginning than there was bliss. There was more suffering than there was upliftment. But gradually the experiences started to come. And then that one day, one evening actually, when the Kundalini broke forward and came up streaming through the spine in a very powerful way and absolutely riveted me to my third eye point. Now, I had heard Mother talk about it, but there is no way in the world that I could have suggested this experience to myself or programmed it into me to happen, because it was so much more powerful, so much more painful than I could have imagined before. And it may seem strange that a spiritual experience can be painful, but we find out that that's true, because it stretches you. It stretches your nervous system. It's there to purify you. And these purification rites aren't always easy to go through. And this is something that I came to understand from Mother. Mother didn't pull any punches when it came to this mystical crucifixion that she started me into. You know, I thought always that Mother must have been the greatest salesman. She talked about the mystical crucifixion. It's going to be painful. It's going to take you through the death experience. You're going to have to give up everything that you love about this world. Now, who'd like to sign up? And she actually had those who signed up and who started going into those experiences. But it was very interesting to see how many could actually pass through the various levels and stages of those experiences. Many of them had very powerful experiences, very uplifted, very great souls in their own right. But they didn't make it all the way. They didn't go all the way because something came along. Something dissuaded them at some point. And we can all say, well, that would never happen to me. But God knows right where our soft spots are. And He'll go after them. Not because He's cruel, not because He doesn't want us to succeed, but because those are the very places that we need to surrender, that we need to put ourselves fully and completely on the path toward Him. And this is our path. It is your path, my path, everyone's path. There are things that are similar to it, to each person's path. And then there are things that are absolutely unique to each person, because every one of our karma is unique to us. No two people, just like no two snowflakes, are exactly alike. No two people are exactly alike. You cannot have somebody else's experience. You can only have your own. And yet that there are these hallmarks that come along, these awakenings, these experiences that you are put through. Now, people don't always know what level of consciousness that they have attained. And this may also seem like a strange statement. Mother had one disciple. She lived in New York. And she called Mother up and she said, "Mother, I have a problem. Every time I go to practice Kriya Yoga, I go into a breathless state and I can't keep doing my Kriya Yoga. What do I do?" And she didn't even realize Kriya Yoga was designed to take her into that breathless state. It's like riding in a vehicle and getting to your destination. You don't stay in the vehicle, you get out and you enjoy the destination. And so her Kriya had taken her into that breathless state. I've experienced it that myself. There were times when I was drawn into deep meditation. And it's very interesting. It's not always when you're sitting on your meditation blanket. In this case, I was in a car. And I started getting uplifted, and I had a passenger with me, and I asked them if they would drive because I wasn't able to do such a good job right then because God was calling me. I got into the passenger seat, and this energy went flying up my spine all the way up to the top of my head. And after some time, I was aware I'm not breathing. Not even a shallow breath, nothing at all. It's completely still. And here I am riding in the car. I had no intention of going into this deep meditation state. But God decided to do it right then. And it was very interesting being the observer watching absolute stillness. And the mind was calm. There's no fear. There's no sense that I was suffocating or there wasn't enough air or anything like that. It's completely calm in that pure state. It was something that God gave to me. And that's something that you come to realize as well, is that grace is a very big, important component in all of this. If you use the analogy of how do you digest your meal, most of you had dinner tonight, and your stomach is in there, and it's doing all of this digestive process. A lot of complicated things going on. And yet you're not orchestrating it. You may not even be aware of it unless you have some indigestion and your stomach is a little too full. Otherwise, your body is just going about doing what it does. And in a very similar way, when it comes to getting your God realization, God knows what to do. There is a vital, intelligent energy inside of you that does it all for you. And the further you go down that road, the less you are really in charge of your own sadhana, your spiritual practice. And the more God is, because you are more of a witness. You are an instrument to what this divine consciousness and energy is doing in and through you. And it's wonderful. And it's challenging. I remember one time we were having one of our potlucks. We were at the Congregational Church at the time. And there wasn't a tablecloth for one of the tables. So I was sent to go get a sheet for it to be a tablecloth. And I got to the house and I sat down in front of the closet where the linens were. And God took me up. And I don't know how long I was there, but I was in a little bit of trouble when I got back because it took me a long time to go and get this. God is in charge. He takes control of your life. And to some people, this is a frightening thought. What will God do with me? Will I cease to exist? Where will I end up at? We hear these fireworks being set off around us, and something is set off and it flies up into the air. Where is it going to land? Where is it going to go? There's some unknown things about it. And when God takes you, it's like a powerful rocket that's taking you. Only it's not mindless. It has an intelligence to it. And it guides you and it directs you if you will allow it. But temptations come. It is said that Jesus fell three times. as he carried his cross, which is his body, up to the hill of Golgotha, or the hill of the skull. You see, this all happens right inside of you. That way is right up through your spine. And you're going up into higher consciousness. And in the story, Jesus falls three different times. And at one place, he was helped. Somebody else had to pick up and carry it for him. And that is the guru. The guru comes in when you can't and picks up the load and helps you to take it for you. That is the way that God orchestrates everything. He will empty you out. He will take you right down to the last nth of what you think you can do. But there is nothing to be afraid of, because as God empties you out of yourself, he fills you up with himself. And this is the most marvelous thing. Jesus talked about the wineskin. He says you can't pour new wine into an old wineskin. It'll burst at the seams. He says you need a new wineskin. And he's talking metaphorically here. He did that a lot, if you notice. He was a storyteller. He loved to tell stories. Who tells better stories than Jesus? And it wasn't like everybody around him understood what in the heck he's talking about. He left many people baffled quite often. And he was tough that way. He didn't overexplain himself. And he expected the disciples to figure it out, to continue on in faith, even when they didn't understand. And sometimes he'd yell at them, "Why don't you understand? You've been with me this long." And so God is like that with us sometimes inside. He's tough with us. And we have to be tough in order to follow the path. But when we are, and we expend ourselves 100% all the way, then God begins to pour the new wine, his consciousness, into a new wineskin, or that which has been created inside of us. Because God goes right into our nervous system, and it's an amazing thing to watch. He goes in, and he begins to change your nervous system. Why? Because you are going to be filled with a dynamic energy that, if it was just put into you without any preparation, absolutely burn you to a crisp. And even when you are prepared, sometimes it's quite a thing, it's quite an ordeal to experience the power and the intelligence and the everything that God gives to you. But it's just like exercise. If you go out and you exercise your muscles, if you're walking or running or lifting some weights, it challenges your current system, your muscles, your blood vessels. But your body begins to respond to it by building more blood vessels, by building more muscle. And then you are able to do more endurance. You are able to do more weights. Whatever it is that you're doing. And so God stretches you. He pours himself in through your nervous system, through your body. And as a result, your body responds. Now, this is your body on the physical level, but it's also on the astral level and the causal level. And many times they're all happening at the same time. So it stretches you. It takes you to the limit of what you think you can do. And as a result, your system responds by growing larger, by strengthening itself. And so your nerves change, and they become capable conduits for this tremendous Christ consciousness that's coming. There's a story that's so wonderfully told in India. And the story goes that the king is out hunting. He's with his prime minister and a whole group of people who are out with him. And he gets lost. He gets separated from everybody else. And as a result, He's wandering and wandering and really getting very tired and very hungry and no clue as to where he's at. They're looking for him, but somehow they've all gotten separated. And then there is a man who works in the forest, and he discovers the king, but he doesn't recognize him as the king. His clothes are torn, looking quite beat up and bedraggled. The king doesn't announce himself that he's the king. And this man takes the king in, and he feeds him, and he gives him rest, all without knowing anything about who he is. And the king is so impressed by the hospitality of this very, very poor man. And so finally, he discovers his group, and his group discovers him. And off they go. But he'd like to do something for this man who treated him so well without knowing anything at all about him. And so he sends word to this man, and he says, "I'm going to come and visit you." Well, the man is terrified at this, because he doesn't have a castle. He doesn't have a home or food or anything that you would treat a king with. But the king has anticipated this, and so he sends his servants. And the servants come as carpenters, and they build the man a new home. And then he sends carpets, and he sends furniture, and he sends food, and everything that's required in order to receive a prince, a king. And then finally the king comes, and everything has been done to prepare the way. And this man feels totally comfortable being the host to this man he now knows who is the king. God is exactly this way. He knows what is required. He knows what it is that you need. And he sends everything that you are ever going to need in order to receive the king, the divine consciousness. And so he works in you and through you. Now, if you say to yourself, "But I'm not having great spiritual experiences. I have not had these things happen to me." Well, God is preparing you if you are doing your part. If you are keeping your mind on him, meditating daily, expanding your consciousness, chanting his name, serving him in all that you do, you are doing your part. And God is preparing you through that. So you don't know how near or how far you are. You really don't. The human mind cannot know. And sometimes it's the most humble, it's the one who doesn't think they've had much happen to them. And yet, somehow through their experiences, they have done everything exactly right. You become like this disciple who is in New York. And you say, "How do I keep doing my Kriya? I keep going into this breathless state." You know, it's charming, her innocence, her lack of knowing. Of course, she's had the teachings. She knew, or she should have known, what was happening to her, and yet God was keeping her ignorant of that. And here she was, thinking that there is something wrong with her, while she was going into this high state of consciousness. So don't worry about taking your temperature, how near or how far. Stay focused on the path. Stay focused on doing those things that God is operating through you. And if it seems like nothing in particular is happening, leave it to God. He's the one who will make everything ready when the time is right. You know, it's really a complicated story in the sense of our karma. We don't know all the things that we have done in the past. You even think about earlier in your life. How much do you remember of before you were 10 years old, or 5 years old, or 2 or 3? You have fragment memories, usually, but not all the memories. Certainly you remember some things, but you think of the totality of time that went into 10 years, that's a lot of time. And we may not have that many experiences. So when you go back to other lifetimes or who you were, where you were before you came into this lifetime, it's not that unusual that you might not remember. We're really quite efficient about that, that we remember those things that are important to us. And if God wants you to, then He will remember everything that is necessary to help you in your awakening process. I've found that to be absolutely true in my own life. Once God took me back into a lifetime in which I was the head of a village, and I was a very large barrel-chested man, and the winters were very, very cold. But I seemed to be inured to the cold. We worked outside a lot, and we lived in sod kind of huts. And there are some very wonderful things about that time and that existence. And there are things that I needed to know from that time that helped to release me from some things that I was struggling with. You see, in general, we shouldn't seek out after that much past life experience just out of curiosity. But when God gives it to you, it's very targeted. It's given to you for a reason, because it helps to release you from something, helps you to overcome something, because now you understand it from a deeper level. And so God will unfold everything that you need. It's also proof to you that you have lived before, that you've had previous existences, and that they have their effect on you now. You're really a marvelous creation. You really are. And God is dwelling inside of you, and that's the most marvelous thing of all. Because you have entered into a lifetime in which He is calling you to Himself. And this is a true turning point in human evolution. Human evolution takes us all the way from the elemental forces, and then that which is vegetation, and then that which is animal, and finally into the human. And we evolve, and we grow, and we refine. And when we come to the point of entering into this path, we turn from evolution to involution. Involution is turning the mind inward. Instead of refining ourselves in this world, which we may continue to do on various levels, we may get education, a profession, family, we still learn on all of those levels. But we are learning to go through involution. We turn the mind inward. We bring all of the life energy to those centers that we have been taught at the third eye point, at the heart, at the top of the head. And as a result of that, we learn how to lift that energy up into the higher centers. And this is a tremendous change in our development, where we switch from evolution to involution. And so God takes you through this as well. Now we have to make our own effort. We have to give everything that we are to this path. There are no halfway measures. They don't work. And they will trip you up. And you will not make the progress. But when you realize that this is the most important thing in your life, that there is nothing that compares in value, in leading a successful life, then you have really put your feet on the path. And God will take you at your word, and He will change you. I wanted to read to you some from Master. And this comes from Master's writing on Jesus. To understand the magnitude of a divine incarnation, it is necessary to understand the source and nature of the consciousness that is incarnate in an avatar. Jesus spoke of this consciousness when he proclaimed, "I and my Father are one," and "I am in the Father, and the Father in me." Those who unite their consciousness to God know both the transcendent and the immanent nature of spirit. Transcendent as being beyond human consciousness and experience, immanent that it is very much an integral part of who you are. The singularity of the ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss of uncreate absolute and the myriad manifestations of his being as the infinite forms in which he variegates himself in the panorama of creation. There is a distinguishing difference of the meaning between Jesus and Christ. His given name was Jesus. His honorific title was Christ. In his little human body, called Jesus, was born the vast Christ consciousness, the omniscient intelligence of God, omnipresent in every part and particle of creation. The universe is not the result merely of a fortuitous combination of vibrating forces and subatomic particles, as proposed by material scientists, a chance excrescence of solids, liquids, and gases into earth, oceans, atmosphere, plants, all harmoniously interrelated to provide a habitable home for human beings? Blind forces cannot organize themselves into intelligently structured objects. As human intelligence is needed to put water into small square compartments of an ice tray to be frozen into cubes, so in the coalescence of vibration into progressively evolving forms throughout the universe, we see the results of a hidden, immanent intelligence. And as one commentator said, "Is it conceivable that a rock becomes Mozart?" When we really think about it, we see there has to be a guiding intelligence in all of this creation. And the most magnificent thing is that that intelligence of Christ was not born in just one man, but was born in you and is waiting to be born in you and to thrive and to grow into the spiritual being that you are meant to be. We really are honored to be on this path, all of us are, to be called to it. And to ignore that call, to not respond to it with 100% of ourselves, is a crime that we commit against ourselves. Nobody will judge us, but we will judge ourselves on that day if we miss the opportunity. Because I have had that experience of spending a life that was meant to be turned towards spiritual pursuits and having gotten sidetracked into material pursuits instead. And it was a very deep pain that I caused for myself. We oftentimes imagine that God must be judging us. God does not judge us. God is always rooting for us. He's striving for us. He wants the best for us. But he does not need to judge us. We judge ourselves. There is a truth barometer deeply buried inside of us. And we know the truth of ourselves. We know the truth of what we do and what we don't do. And it's not anybody else who judges us. Do we satisfy ourselves? Or do we feel that we have cheated ourselves? That truth barometer lives with us always, and we know it if we'll open ourselves to it. without fear, without blind attachment. So as we enter into this new year, think about a theme, perhaps. There may be something that sums up in a phrase or a word this past year. And as you look forward into this next year, think of a theme, a word, or a phrase that may sum up what it is that you would like to accomplish in this coming year. It could be that it's purely spiritual. It could be that it's something of the material, but it's definitely calling to you in your growth, in doing something that will help you in your evolution. Or it could be that you want to get more involved on the involution of going inside and finding God there. Whatever the case is, think about it a little bit. Think if there's something that comes to you, this word or this phrase, this concept, this vision, however it comes to you, maybe a feeling. And you can make that your theme for the year. You can write it down on a piece of paper. You can post it someplace where you will see it occasionally. Maybe on your altar. Maybe on a mirror in the bathroom. Someplace where you might see it. On your desk. And help remind you, oh yes, that's essential. That's something that is really important. I really want to make progress this coming year. And make that a theme that helps you to grow. Helps you to become more in the likeness and image of God. For that is in truth what you are. Only we're not consciously manifesting it, perhaps. So I just want to say that it's so lovely to spend this time. I couldn't think of a better way to bring in the New Year's than focused on our spiritual path, to be focused on God and gurus, and to be meditating. And what a wonderful opportunity this is, that I did it so for so many years with Mother. And I never wanted to miss one of them. And I couldn't even think of someplace else I'd rather be. Only there. So it is my great joy, and I know there are those who could not travel today, tonight, or it wouldn't work out for them. And so they are joining us through the internet, and I love that. I love that we're able to connect in this way. And that we all join in the Spirit of God and the Masters, and to make this a special evening in which we feel the fullness and completeness of that spiritual consciousness that's residing inside each and every one of us. Let us meditate for a few minutes, and then we'll take a break.